Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
You know, it's hard to believe that that baseball season is back, because the weather doesn't feel like baseball when baseball season starts now. It's so early. But a lot of people get inspired by the beginning of the baseball season, and one of them is our guest now. Chuck Blahaus is his name. And if you go to discoursemagazine.com, you can find a column he's written on what we can learn about the economy, about economics from baseball. Chuck, welcome to WTIC.
Well, thanks for having me on.
What is this all about? This you're trying to convince people, I think, who aren't baseball fans that they should be, by making them understand that they could understand economics better?
Well, maybe it's I'd be happy if people just looked a little more empathetically and sympathetically towards those of us who are baseball fanatics, even if I don't convince them to be them. But, for people like me who do economics or do any sort of quantitative science, I've found that a disproportionate number of people in my profession and in related professions have been, baseball fans. And I became interested in why that was the case. And it led to the essay, the rumination on how I became comfortable with quantitative reasoning and how the experience of staring at baseball statistics as a kid really prepared me for my current profession.
You know, that's interesting. My older brother was always a big baseball fan when we were kids, and he collected baseball cards and thousands of them, and memorized all the stats. And I guess it's a place where you can apply your inclination towards numbers maybe before you get old enough to understand what those professions might be.
Well, very definitely. I'm an extreme case. I was pretty fanatical about it and got very, very deeply into the numbers and the analytics later on. But what I would argue is that even people who don't go as deeply as I did nevertheless become a lot more comfortable with numbers and with math just from the experience of following baseball. It's the game is just awash in numbers. So whether you're collecting baseball cards and looking at the numbers on the back, or whether you're going to games and seeing the numbers blaring from the scoreboards, or whether you're paging through the guidebooks, there's numbers everywhere. And without really intending to or trying to, you become a lot more comfortable with sifting patterns out of the data, and you actually find yourself developing images and pictures and impressions of players just by looking at their stat lines without really making any effort to accomplish that sort of that sort of expertise.
I guess what you're saying is that for people who are baseball fans, the action is in your mind, and it doesn't need to be so fast on the field if you're thinking about the game. And it is interesting. I never thought of it in that framing that you're providing, but there are other games that are more exciting on the surface, like football, which is really violent, and chess both at once. But we tend to be fans watching on television tend to be sucked into it by the speed and the hits and all the excitement, the flash of the game. And we don't get to learn so much about how it works. But baseball is structured the opposite way, I guess, where you get led in to a large extent by how the game works.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, football is in many ways the ultimate television sport, right? It televises extremely well. Baseball is a very different sort of animal. There's sporadic action, right? And then there's space between the action. And that space is filled up by a lot of thinking and analysis and discussion and contemplation of what is going on from a statistical perspective or a tactical perspective. And not only that, it drifts over into sort of the game away from the game. If you're a baseball fan, then you're probably, you know, if you're really into it, you're playing tabletop baseball, right? You're doing fantasy leagues. You're doing a lot of things away from the game that involve analyzing the game and contemplating how the numbers work. So it's very much a mental game within a game for the spectator.
So what is it that makes that line up with people who are into numbers then, and how should the rest of us look at that? Like, should we view it as an opportunity to be learning more about numbers, or just to learn how to maybe live life at a slower pace and use our minds more?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of goes both ways, right? I mean, I think the game probably attracts you if you have that sort of quantitative or analytical instinct to begin with. But I would argue it goes the other way as well. I think people who may not have been terribly analytical or quantitative in their thinking are made more comfortable with that sort of thinking by being a baseball fan. So for example, if you were to take a, you know, even a very casual fan, someone who, you know, wasn't a math major, wasn't that deeply into the game, but you could show him the back of a baseball card, and if he saw, you know, 235 batting average, 30 home runs, 140 strikeouts, and no stolen bases, they'd immediately get an image in their head of, you know, like a big muscle-bound first baseman. But if you showed them a stat line that said batter hit 330, 53 stolen bases, 12 triples, they're going to get immediately a very different image in their head. So what happens is baseball trains you to actually derive information from data in a way that you are, you know, not even trying to accomplish.
Yeah, that's cool. And for me, I haven't maintained baseball fanship, but I was into it, I guess, because of the influence of my older brother and the Red Sox in their 67 season that I was, I was like a 10-year-old for, so that was fun. And at the same time, I have certain qualities. For example, I don't like Hollywood movies with explosions and a lot of flash and special effects and all that. I don't need high-speed chases to feel the tension of a story. Give me a small movie with a limited budget, and I think those guys create more tension and more excitement with narrative rather than with explosions. And it sounds like you're making the same case, that you can develop a certain side of yourself and find a nice, relaxing. I guess it's why baseball's the summer game too, because it moves at the pace of a hot, humid August day.
Very much so, and I think that's very insightful, right? There are sports, I think, that fulfill the desire for continuous action or for, you know, continuous excitement better than baseball. But baseball sort of requires that you slip into a different time, sort of a almost a pre-technological time, right? And in fact, baseball moves by its own time. It's very different from football or basketball or hockey sports that are timed, where you are, you know, working within a clock. You can run out the clock, and you're trying to achieve a certain number of points, you know, more points than the other team is, until that clock runs.
In other words, it comes with pressure, and baseball doesn't. It's not packaged with any limits to the package, really.
Right. Baseball, I think, is much more similar to the sort of children's games we played growing up that didn't have a clock, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about baseball, I don't know if you ever played kick the can growing up or any of those games, right? But it's fundamentally different from those sports where you have one team trying to move a ball or a puck or whatever into the other team's goal or net or end zone, and they're trying to do it more often than the other team does in a certain amount of time. But there were also these games we played when we were younger as kids, and we weren't worried about the time. And games like kick the can, where you kick something and run around, touch this tree, touch that tree, touch this base. Baseball clearly derives from that sort of play. And so it's a game that sort of invites you to sort of lose yourself in the moment and really observe what's going on, sort of just looking at something and seeing the patterns and the themes that emerge from it, rather than having, you know, a continual stream of payoffs.
We're talking to Charles Blahaus. His story is What Baseball Teaches Us, which you can find in Discourse magazine. So how do you feel about the new rules, Chuck? Have they ruined the game?
No, I think there's been some good ones and some I wasn't so crazy about. I actually like the pitch clock a lot. I mean, the game that I grew up watching was much faster than the game as it had slowed down to in recent years. And I think that was a real problem for baseball, and I commend them for taking it on. I'm not as big a fan of moves like banning the shifts my attitude is don't blame teams for figuring out how to win, right? If a team figures out how to win, and if you think it leads to a boring brand of baseball, instead of saying, well, you can't do that, you should change the conditions of the game to reward more exciting strategies.
So you mean to adjust another aspect of the game?
Exactly. I mean, I think the general consensus was the game had devolved, in part because of the analytics, into too many home runs, too many bases on balls, too many strikeouts. The ball just wasn't in play enough. You know, the pitcher would throw a lot of pitches, and very few of them would wind up being hit and chased by a fielder, which was the essence of the fun and excitement of baseball in earlier times. But analytics had figured out, hey, there's actually a lot of value in these guys who either strike out, draw a walk, or hit a home run. So we started to see a lot of those guys. And, you know, that was a problem. That did make baseball a lot less interesting. But I think there are better ways to fix it than restricting how teams respond to the conditions. What you do is you change the conditions, right? You could move the fences out. You could shrink the foul territory. You can make the balls a little, you know, little softer on the inside. You can restrict the bats a little bit. And you can create a game that rewards more just putting the ball in play and lessens the premium on just, you know, waiting for at bat pitch and trying to drive it out of the park. So, so I wasn't a fan of all the rules changes, but I do think some of the rules changes have really improved things in the last couple of years.
Well, Chuck, it was fun reading your column, and it's fun to talk with you. I appreciate you taking the time to join us and put us in the mood for those humid days in August.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Charles Blahaus, What Baseball Teaches Us. It's discoursemagazine.com from the Mercatus Center. Appreciate your time, sir, and good luck with the book. I hope you sell very slowly and gradually so people can analyze the numbers.
Thanks very much.
All right, take care. 860-522-9842. Lot to go through today. We're going to pause for a quick break and get things moving on WTIC.
Listen to the Todd Feinberg Show on the free Odyssey app. Download and like WTIC and follow Todd Feinberg today.
Anybody watch UConn Men yesterday? Was it yesterday or the day before? My mind's a blur now. What fun that game was. Saturday. Okay, what did I do yesterday then? I missed yesterday. That game was so much fun. I love how it was. I don't know, was it the first quarter of the game or third of the game that it was competitive before the run? What did it? No, was it really halfway when they went on the 30-0? Well, I know, but there's still quarters of the game or a third of the game or whatever. You know, you can still do the fractions in your head, but it was. It didn't take the whole half, is what I'm saying, Roland, I don't think, did it, before it started shifting? That run was amazing. Were you betting on that, Roland?
Well,
oh, yeah, you don't get much. Yeah. That was, what a dominant club. I haven't watched much UConn basketball, I have to admit. I've watched more of the girls than the guys, actually. But it almost seems unfair to have a guy 7 foot. Is he really 7'2"? He looks every bit of it. He looks taller, actually. But what an agile guy. He moves around good. He blocks those shots, changes the whole. Isn't it interesting how a team gets taken out of the game by their own their own reluctance to do what they normally can do best once it starts to fail on them. Like, it's really hard to have an adjustment ready when your shots are being blocked. Just normal shots that you can put up and get are suddenly being blocked. I thought it was so fascinating to watch. It was a blast. And it goes by fast. I like it better than the pros. I do. I like it better than the pros. All right, Rob in Middletown, what do you think?
This is so much better than the pros. These kids actually play for something. They're not worried about getting the check out of the mailbox. They're worried about winning that game. They set goals, and they're getting them off.
And they go inside.
Oh, and God, it's been awesome. This whole year has been incredible. Me and my wife jumping up off the couch every night.
Well, I like the image of that there's a little jack-in-the-box thing going on in the house.
Yeah, it's such more quality, higher quality than the pros. I mean, they play every play. Then the defense, they're relentless.
Oh my!
It's been awesome, awesome.
So, do you? Is it all about the big guy? Do you think, or are there other?
No, absolutely not. They're so deep. They got five guys that can come off the bench and beat probably everybody but three of the best teams in the country.
But that game was neck and neck for some portion of that first half, right?
Yeah, they are, and then they just turned it on, and I've never seen any. I've been watching a long time. This is the best college basketball team I've ever seen. I didn't get to see the Bill Walton UCLA teams, but hands down, this team's better than any of those Duke teams, North Carolina with Jordan. Yeah, and they don't get any props. You hear the announcers, oh, well, you know, UConn's playing Illinois today. Yeah, and they lost by 30 again. It's been great. It's been great to watch.
All right, Rob, good to hear from you. Thank you, sir. Candace calling from Hartford. Hello, Candace.
Hello.
Thank you for the call.
I wanted to get back to baseball for a second.
Okay, good.
That was a nice little segment. I just have a thing. My grandmother used to write down everything about the games in the early 1900s, so my grandfather could read everything when he got home. But now everything has gotten so, I don't know what I want to say, but I
can't
watch
the games. High pressure, fast paced.
I can't watch the programs anymore because of the spinning. That's all they show.
The spinning.
I would think that the players could have backed off from that during the pandemic when they had to wear a mask. I mean, every time the camera shows a player, they're spinning.
Oh, spinning.
Yeah, and it's disgusting. The other thing is
that's too bad.
The neck chains. They're getting so big that I'm afraid someone's going to put an eye out, knock a tooth out. It's ridiculous. What is that for? Why are they wearing them?
You're talking about the pro guys?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Candace.
But the spitting has got to stop.
Spitting has got to stop, and we've got to get rid of the big chains. Thank you, Candace, for the call. 860-522-9842. We're going to pause for news.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
On WTIC.
Why wait? Come on. Oh, come on. Why wait? You can rant right now at 860-751-4698 on the Todd Feinberg Show.
All right, it's WTIC. I want you to listen to something. They're doing it in California again. California's always doing it. Did you hear about this? Minimum wage going to $20 an hour for fast food workers. $20 an hour. Can you imagine how much this hurts businesses and how much it hurts people who are trying to get jobs? Well, how much pressure it puts business owners, how much pressure it puts them under to find a way to get that money back, to build efficiencies, to employ people who do better work. If you're paying people 25% more, they're going from $16 an hour to $20. Am I doing the math right? Yeah, it's going up 25%. If you're going to pay them 25% more, you've got to have people who are able to perform at that rate. It's terrible. And they're doing it for, listen to this. This is so bad for everybody.
More than half a million fast food workers in California will get that big pay raise, a $4 increase from $16 an hour to $20 an hour. That's 25% more in their paychecks. Advocates say it's about time, given the high cost of living and inflation.
Who are advocates and why are they being quoted? Who are advocates exactly? They're people who, what? Well, if they're unionized, they're union folk. So they're not doing fair analysis. They're just wanting more money for them. Who else is an advocate? Poor people who can't earn more than minimum wage, so they want minimum wage hiked. Well, that's why one of the reasons you don't want a minimum wage, because it creates an incentive for people to move public policy. And if you collect enough of those people, it creates an incentive for politicians to change laws in order to get votes. And that's what we have now. That's the curse of the country right now, is that the system, so many of the systems are rigged in that way that people aren't doing public policy that's in the best interest of the public. It's instead in the best interest of the special interests, the ones who vote for the people who support those policies.
The new law only affects fast food workers at chains with at least 60 locations nationwide.
All right, so The new $20 an hour minimum wage only applies to big fast food chains that have more than 60 restaurants. And what does that mean if you've got two restaurants or one? What does it mean? Does it mean that you get to offer people $12 an hour? Or does it mean that nobody's coming into your restaurant for a job if you're not paying $20 an hour, like that's what you get paid for fast food? What do you think? This is why you never want government rigging the system. I wish there was a way, some magic dust I could just sprinkle on the world so people would understand that government is just such a problem when it steps into a marketplace. It ruins the market. And they do that so they can point and say, look what we did. Only government can rig things for you like this. And people tend not to see the badness of it. Well, they do. Sure. Prices are going to go. Who eats fast food? Who eats fast food but people who, just have a taste for it? It's not that everybody's got a vested interest in cheapness, but it used to be cheap fast food. It used to be the way you could grab something on the run that didn't cost you a ton of money. Look what's happened to it now. I don't know the prices because I don't do fast food, but unless you consider pizza, and I'm amazed at how much it costs for a pizza now, where do you get a good price on fast food anymore? I think that's gone. I think that's over, and that's over because of the Ned Lamonts of the world and the Matt Ritters of the world, who think they should set the rate at a really high point so they can buy a vote. But they buy votes at the price of you not being able to buy fast food. 860-522-9842.
The new law only affects fast food workers at chains with at least 60 locations nationwide, but some small business owners are feeling the pressure to compete.
Yeah, no kidding. Of course they do. What do you mean some? All small businesses.
But some small business owners are feeling the pressure to compete, and this could also mean higher prices for consumers because they'll want to cover those costs.
They don't want to cover those costs. They have to cover the costs. They have to pay it. Where are they going to get the money from? 860-522-9842. Aaron in Goshen. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Todd. So a couple things. Are you familiar with Big Mac economics?
No.
So I'll elaborate. So historically, a Big Mac meal has cost what 1 hour of minimum wage will pay. And this is, you can look it up, and it's pretty much spot on throughout, you know, the last 30 years of minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
So be prepared, people. Big Mac meal, $20 plus for the meal.
Well, you how much is a Big Mac right
now? Top restaurants.
What's that?
I think a Big Mac right now is probably you're flirting with about $16. Depending on what part of the state you're in, obviously the northern part of the state is cheaper than the southern part. But that's what you're looking at, and it's crazy to me that a lot of people that are going, oh, we should minimum wage should be a livable wage. Well, that's great for entry level people. The problem is, if you're a top wage earner, your rate you have to make double or in some cases triple in order to afford to live. So what I'm saying is, as minimum wage, which isn't a livable wage, never was designed to be, just an entry wage to get people into, the workplace, goes up and is this incredible amount of money that they're spending. Well, mm-hmm. Guess what? So does the cost of goods and everything you buy.
Yeah, it drives
we
up
make
everything.
Make it $50 an hour, you're just going to spend $500 for a plate of dinner. I mean, how do you want it? Do you want to be there's a Saturday Night Live that's hilarious with Dan Aykroyd and his other name's escaped me. I don't have time to bring it up. But anyways, they talk about, wouldn't you want to drive around in a $6 million car? Wouldn't you like to live in a $12 million home and eat $10,000 dinners? Well, that's what we're heading towards if we don't get this under control. Because the bottom line is, it doesn't matter what we make minimum wage. Everything is based off of that. So somebody who's making $35 an hour during a $10 an hour minimum wage, what do they have to make now in order to accommodate or keep living the same amount? They need to be making $65, $75 per hour.
Yeah,
so
it just creates
what we do.
Creates the illusion, I think, Aaron, that there is something good in this for everybody. But what it just does is creates this chasing of the tail dynamic. 860-522-9842. Don in East Hartford. Hi, Don.
Good afternoon, my brother. Are you anti-labor? Are you anti-union?
Yes, of course. No, I'm pro-worker. That's why I'm anti-union.
No, you're not pro-worker because you are implying that these people don't work $20 an hour.
Well, they obviously aren't. They obviously aren't worth $20 an hour because they don't get paid that unless the government forces people to pay them that.
This is not Connecticut. This is the big, rich California where all the superstars live.
Well, the superstars live in Hollywood, which is one little part of a state that goes from Connecticut all the way down to what? North Carolina, South Carolina. It's a big state. It's got,
yes.
It's the size. It's 10 million people bigger than Canada in population. So your comparison, those fancy people you see on TV, that's not what it's all about. It's an incredibly expensive state to live because you have an activist government that is always working to drive up the cost of living. And that causes them to go running from one group of people to the next, pretending to be doing them a favor by driving up the cost of living. So if what we just heard from Aaron, Don, that the Big Mac economics tells you that a Big Mac generally costs what minimum wage is. If you take minimum wage and drive it up to $20, then everybody who is making $20 an hour now has to pay $20 for a Big Mac.
I'm not a proponent of fast food. Fast food makes you unhealthy. So I don't care. They could shut it down for all I care. It makes America very, very unhealthy.
Well, it does, but this is we're talking about the economic aspect of it, not the health aspect. That people buy it because it is cheap, because it's made with cheap ingredients. And if you pretend it's expensive by driving up minimum wage, so somebody working there has to be a high-paid worker, that means they have to go pay tons of money for dinner.
Well, you always talk about the market. Let the market regulate itself.
If
the people can't afford to pay $20, they close down their business and go try something else. Get out of the fast food business.
Well, but they drive up the cost of everything, and it certainly isn't good for people who want a good price for a burger to have the government shutting down fast food restaurants. It might be healthier, but it doesn't mean that you can get fast food at a good price.
You can get burgers at the hometown restaurants. You don't have to go to burgers.
The hometown restaurants are going to have to match these prices. That's the trouble, because if everybody knows you can go make $20 at Burger King, then they're not going to work at a place that doesn't pay that. See, you see, Don, the best thing for poor people is capitalism. That's what America has proven. Why did you come here? Why do people come to this country?
I tell you why immigrants come here.
Why?
Because of the foreign policy. I've been longing to tell you this for the longest time. Now you gave
Thank
me
you.
The opportunity to tell you. The reason why most immigrants from all over the world come here is because of the foreign policy by the developed countries and what they do and what they have done to other developed countries.
You're saying
they rip up the natural resources, or they dictate to third world countries and cause poverty, and they fill my country with guns that we don't make guns and
so you're saying we ruin the rest of the world so everybody comes here
with your foreign policy? But Americans don't know nothing about your foreign policy. I've learned that since I'm here. I'm like, my God,
well,
Americans don't know anything about what their government does outside of America. You guys don't know.
I think you're right about that. That part of it, I think you're right about. But I don't think that's why immigrants come. You might have come because of that. But I don't think, I think people are coming here because they want to be able to get paid for working. And if they work harder, they want to be able to make more, which is what people do when they come to this country. Because we have capitalism. But, Don, your point is valid as well, so thank you for making it. 860-522-9842. We're going to pause for a moment and talk some more. Coming up on WTIC.com.
Never miss a moment. Go listen to the Todd Feinberg podcast on the Odyssey app.
We're talking minimum wage because those commies in California have moved the fast food minimum wage to $20 an hour, which means all restaurants are going to have to start paying people $20 an hour. And that means the cost of everything is going to go up. Because what happens if you're running a grocery store and people start leaving because they can be making a few bucks more an hour at the fast food restaurant down the street? Come on, man. This stuff isn't complicated. You just have to think about it a little bit. Ralph in South Carolina. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Ralph. Good afternoon. Actually, I'm in Connecticut and going through sticker shock with prices up here.
Well, I just looked it up. The minimum wage in South Carolina is half, less than half, a buck less than half of what it is in Connecticut.
We don't seem to have any problem. I work for a large chain. I work part-time, and we pay probably starting about $14 or $15 an hour.
Because that's what the market is for what you guys do?
Exactly, because that's what it has to be to get help. Like you said, it has to be, you know, you have to, the prevailing wage is what you have to pay, or you're not going to get any people. Like, we have problems getting help.
Yep.
But I was thinking, you're a past caller talking about why people come here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why people come here now is totally different than why they came here when my grandparents came here. My parents came here from Italy, and I'm sure many of your listeners did too, and from all countries all over the world. They came here to better themselves. They didn't get free telephones.
Yeah, but I think people still do that, Ralph.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're getting, I mean, now what do you get? You get a free phone. You got a free
that's the boring litany. We know all that. But really, people are coming here because they want opportunity. They're not risking their lives to come here because they can be handed some social program. I don't think most people.
I agree with you that part of them do that. There's a small percentage. Right now, how many criminals do we know that are coming to this country because they're being released from jails in Venezuela and from the mental institutions to bring them, get rid of them, to get them out of their country and to bring them to America to cause us issues?
But you know what? Australia was populated for being a place to send prisoners, and it's a great, vibrant country today. You know, it doesn't mean that the people coming because some of them are let out of prison is really a bad thing for us. There are a lot of people who engage in criminal behavior, and in order to run a company that does great things for the society, you know, everything isn't so cut and dry, Ralph.
No, I understand that, but how do you pick out the good ones and the bad ones? You don't. And look what happened in Georgia when that young girl was murdered by someone who should not have been in this country.
Yes, but most murders happen because of people who live here. Most crime is committed by people who live here. It doesn't mean that we've made the country worse because we have immigrants coming in.
I feel that people who come to this country, I don't care who they are, should be fully vetted before they're allowed in.
Well, I agree with that too, because it's just dumb not to do that. But so I'm not advocating for the current system, but I'm just saying, let's not be such a broad brush. We shouldn't be using to paint people who come here. Part of the reason we have such a vibrant economy is because we have people coming here dying to be able to get paid what they're worth. And that's what America offers. So when I see people risking their lives to come across and get here, I think they're doing it because they have opportunity, not because our social programs are so good. I know Democrats are trying to make the social programs so good that people are willing to die for them. But and that will kill all of us for sure. But let's not assume that's everybody. Come on, man. Thank you, Ralph, for the call, though, and thanks for being here. And let's check in with Mark Christopher, who already is making an appearance today in the BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. Hi, Mark.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.